Our guest at the cafe is our favorite economist, Dr. Dale Funderburk. Dale, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you.
Yeah, and that's a long list, Dale. I have a lot of favorite economists, but you're at the very top. So Dale has been for longer than anybody can remember with A&M Commerce, and before that East Texas State, but you have now officially retired.
As of August 31, yes.
Gosh, have you taken up whittling yet?
I haven't done that. However, I find myself in a strange position. For the first time in my life, I have plenty of time, but thanks to COVID, no place to go.
Wow, it's strange times, isn't it? It sure is. So but anyway, Dale has joined the ranks of the retired, but we still want to gain his wisdom on the economy. And normally we talk about things specifically having to do with the Texas economy. And Dale, Texas is still doing quite well. Of course, and it is known as a free market state, but I came across an article and showed it to you in D Magazine. This is by an SMU economist who says Texas really could still do a lot to reduce unnecessary regulations. And this is by a fellow named Dr. Mike Cox that you have a lot of regard for.
I do. As a matter of fact, I've long been a fan of his research. Michael Cox was, in fact, chief economist with the Dallas Federal Reserve for a number of years. He spent about 30 years with the Dallas Fed, and then about 10 years ago, I transitioned to SMU, to their College of Business, and with the Bridwell Institute over there that does a lot of research in the area of free markets and restrictions on free trade.
Mm-hmm. There was a George Mason University study. This comes from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. It says Texas is the fifth worst state in terms of restrictions on business. And that was very surprising to me.
Yes, as a matter of fact, in terms of total regulation there, and that also surprised me. Of course, we were behind California and New York, but I noticed on that, was very surprised. We even have more restrictions than Oregon.
Gosh.
And, you know, Oregon is one of two states in the country that still won't even let you pump your own gasoline there. So
is that right?
That puts us in some highly regulated company.
I had not heard that. You can't pump your own gasoline in Oregon?
Only two states. And an interesting thing, and this ties in with what Michael Cox was saying in this, Oregon passed this law back in 1951, and it was about health and safety, that if you pump your own gasoline, there are too many safety and health things. So here, 70 years later, as a matter of fact, this month, they're loosening a few restrictions, not many, but still some, that, you know, these are almost always put in terms of health and safety, but once you have them, you keep them.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Dale Funderburk, economist and, of course, a longtime A&M Commerce professor. The article gives the example of restrictions that were lifted on small beer breweries in 2013, as recently as 2013, and that has resulted in a big boom in the craft brewery business.
For many, many, many years in Texas, any sales of beer or for off-premise consumption had to go through these large distributors of that. And 2013, they removed some of the restrictions, 2019 another, so that now the little breweries have popped up everywhere, Sulphur Springs, Winsboro, all over the place, and they can now sell growlers there. You can go in and get beer fill. It has really given the consumers a lot more choice.
Yeah. Dr. Cox makes the point that many regulations do protect private property or ensure public health and safety, but others are mainly there to protect the interest of entrenched producers and sellers.
And that is the case. You know, again, almost any regulation, you can find someone who benefits. And in many cases, it's like the thing of pumping gasoline. I don't think anyone would make a serious argument that that's a huge public health risk now. Yeah. But New Jersey and Oregon have that, and every time they talk about removing those restrictions, well, your large distributors come out and they block it. It becomes an anti-competitive thing.
The article by Dr. Cox in D Magazine makes a strong point about occupational licensing, and this was something that was interesting. He said we're probably a little bit overextended in terms of requiring occupational licensing in Texas.
As a matter of fact, he mentioned that Texas has 49 such boards there, which is the second most in the nation there. Again, one of those that the economists have argued for years that, you know, it's one thing to say that to be a medical doctor, you need a license there, but to have your hair braided or to get a haircut, do you have to have 2,000 hours of training? That, again, so often these, which are couched in terms of health and safety, it becomes a way of controlling a supply, of protecting price, keeping out competition.
He writes that 5% of occupations required licensing in the 1950s, but today it's 22%. Well, we'll make a link to this article in D Magazine. You can read it for yourself and come to your own conclusions. But, Dale, good to talk to you again, get your point of view, and thanks for having a cup of coffee with us over the telephone line this morning.
Well, I've enjoyed it, and thanks for the call.
Great. Dr. Dale Funderburk, and you're starting the day with Morning Edition on your station, 88.9 KETR.